Hey, it's Karina.
And Clark.
And welcome to the It's Always Spooky podcast. Before we get into our episode today, we wanted to let you know about a couple of announcements that are super exciting. You had mentioned this on our American Horror Story podcast, but we do now have a Patreon account. You can find it honestly on any of our episodes. You can just hit the support button and it should take you right there. Otherwise, you can just go to patreon.com/ It's Always Spooky. For $5 a month, we will be adding some cool new features. I don't know what any of those features are off the top of my brain. So I will hand it over to Clark.
Yeah. So a couple of things that we're going to have kind of coded into the Patreon are letting you guys know what we're going to be recording a week in advance so that you can let us know your favorite and scariest scenes and have that input featured in the episodes.
Ooh.
And we're also hopefully going to be able to plan some viewing parties and some live chats as we're recording / watching things. And then we're going to come up with a couple of other collaborative experiences along the way.
Absolutely, because this is something that we can like grow, hopefully as it becomes more popular.
Yeah. One other thing that I wanted to mention before we get into today's episode was that we also have an email in the bottom of our episode descriptions where you can provide input, you can give us feedback, but then also we really want to hear your experiences with the scaries and with the paranormals so that we can build an episode that features our listeners' stories.
Yeah, absolutely. Should we also mention the Ko-fi account?
Oh, yeah, too?
It's KOFI.com/ It's Always Spooky. Ko-fi is kind of like a Patreon, but you choose the amount that you're donating rather than it being like a monthly subscription. As we've said before, we're going to continue to make this podcast no matter if we make money on it or not. This is just purely a way for you to show your support to us. And we really just appreciate you even listening to us rant about horror content.
Yeah, we definitely never thought that people would be interested in this. And the amount of listenership and support that we've gotten so far has blew our minds.
It's like blowing my mind is probably the best way to put it.
Yeah. Anyway, let's get on to today's episode.
All right. We're not doing this podcast because we're experts at it.
No. No. Does anybody do a podcast because they actually know shit about shit?
I mean, I don't know, but I bet you the people who like have the really scientific, you know, or nutrition podcasts, you would hope to God, are not just, you know, they're not just like shooting by the cuff. They actually have research behind it, but who knows?
Yeah, you would hope. Yeah. But like, especially with nutrition, there's a lot of bro science bullshit that ends up in that.
That's kind of what I was thinking as I was saying it, is I was thinking that like, I feel like podcasts are one of those things where everybody kind of has an opinion and they are meant very much to be like a free form, more of a free form art than something that like has to be super accurate.
Yeah.
Or has to tell a very particular story. It's like, it's whatever. It's yeah. Art.
And you want it to be an expert who's on the mic.
Yeah.
But like, I feel like a lot of experts are like in the lab. Like,
yeah, well, and you know, maybe they're not super entertaining to actually listen to,
yeah,
right? Like, you know, the facts and the work that they do is really entertaining and really groundbreaking, but maybe it's not like it's not digestible on its own,
yeah.
Or you know, they can't make it super digestible, but a lot of hypotheticals,
yeah. Like, you do have to have a really good balance of accurate, insightful information and somebody who can present that in a way that is entertaining.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Otherwise, like, what the fuck are we doing? We should just read a research paper.
That's definitely true. And yeah. And I just know that when it comes to audio format, like for me, for both podcasts and audiobooks, it has to be a very particular narrator or host. Otherwise I'm bored. Like I don't stay in it as much.
Yeah. In that exact same vein, the narrator for the Audible version of The Shining.
Ooh.
Really good.
Okay.
Really good.
Well, I'm sure lots of people have narrated that or have recorded that book before.
Yeah.
I'm curious who it is. Maybe you can tell us on the next podcast.
Oh, yeah. Because, you know, it's coming up.
That's right. We're doing it at the end of the month,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Sick.
Oh, that's all so exciting.
Ooh, I'm actually really excited to revisit it because I haven't seen it again since we covered it. So I definitely need that's going to go on my list.
I'm doing this really psychologically healthy thing right now where I'm listening to The Shining all the time. And then before bed, I'm reading American Psycho. And I'm in a really good mental space.
Both when you wake up and when you go to sleep.
Yeah. That's good. It's been fun.
That's such a better wake up and good night routine than I have.
Yeah. I go to bed as Patrick Bateman, thinking mm-hmm. about just like materialism and how humans aren't worth anything.
Yep.
And then I wake up thinking that the boiler is about to explode.
As Jack Torrance.
Yeah, as Jack Torrance. Or I am waking up as Tony being like, why am I awake?
Why do I have to go to work again?
Yeah, now we have to play with the bullshit espresso machine. Speaking of a bullshit espresso machine, I couldn't think of a good segue. So, hi, I'm Clark.
Hi, I'm Karina.
And this is It's Always Spooky.
Whoop-a-ra-ta. Ra-ta-ta, ra-ta-ta.
It's Always Spooky.
Hey, so what are we talking about today?
Today, we are kind of following the theme of last week, and we're going with the, I don't remember what year it was made, like 2013?
2013, yeah.
Wow.
I think it was released in theaters in 2014, but 2013 is what is credited on IMDb.
In spirit, I am doing a full circle and a like hair shake really quick. And toss, leg. Like. In spirit, I'm doing that and being like, am I becoming like a movie person?
Right, like a connoisseur of movies.
I'm like remembering things. Yeah.
This is a good ass movie. I remember seeing this movie in the theaters. Brian and I went and saw it together because mm-hmm. it was like a brother sister horror movie. And we're like, oh God, we got to go see this. This has got to be good. And we had a super funny moment while waiting in line to like get our tickets. Right. And we were discussing like, okay, you're going to get the popcorn and I'm gonna get the movie tickets. And then do you want this? And yeah, I want that. And right. And we were going back and forth and we had this sweet old lady come up to us and she was like, I'm sorry to bother you. I just wanted to tell you that I just think you guys are the cutest couple that I've ever seen. And I just wanted to know, how long have you been together? my brother and I, like, we have a really good rapport. And so we just immediately like went all in. He put his arm like around my waist and I put mine over his shoulders. And I was like, what? How long has it been, Brian? Has it been like 16 years? It's been like 16. Yeah, I remember when my mom brought him home from the hospital and I took one look in that crib and I never looked away. Oh. And that poor old lady, she looked like we were either way older than she thought we were or there was something else that was going on. And so finally she just kind of like caught up and she's like, oh, your siblings. And we were like, have a great day. Bye.
Oh my gosh. The thing about that too is that like you guys look related.
Yeah. I remember you saying this right the last time I brought this up.
Yeah. Like you can't mistake that you guys are related.
The only credit I give to this lady is that maybe she just saw us from the back and she saw us bickering back and forth about who's going to buy popcorn and who's going to buy movie tickets. But I found it to be very wholesome and just super funny in hindsight. Because yes, my brother and I are Irish twins. So like we're only 18 months apart. Like, so we're very, very close in age. And so we just both found it insanely funny. We used to go and see movies all the time together. And that was definitely not the first time that people thought that like we were there as boyfriend and girlfriend and not as brother and sister.
Yeah.
So I don't know what vibe we give off, but.
Yeah. I always forget that Brian is actually so close to our age.
Yes. Incredibly and close.
Actually, because I'm 5 months younger than you.
Yeah, so he's really close in age to you. Yeah, yeah.
He's like just about a year.
Just under, yeah. Mm-hmm. Just under a year, I feel like, because he was born in February. No, maybe just over a year. Just over a year. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting, right? Anyways, circling back to Oculus.
Yeah, we'll beat the orbit.
So
back around.
We'll come back to some of our metadata that we typically talk about. So obviously we were discussing this before we started recording, but this is directed by Mike Flanagan, who is definitely one of my favorite directors. Yeah. And this is kind of one of his earlier works that he did. The title card, I did not like this title card. I was very unimpressed by this title card because it's literally just, I had to go back several times and be like, where the fuck is this title card at? It was just so fast. And it was just right after all of the production introductions, and it's just the the name Oculus, and it looks like it's a mirror. Like, it looks like there's something reflected in it. Like, that's it. Just kind of boring.
That's bland.
I feel like you could have done more with that, but
yeah,
it was also one of Mike Flanagan's first movies that he created that wasn't like just a short film.
Yeah.
So give credit where credit's due there.
Yeah.
The tagline for this is, you see what it wants you to see.
Ooh, okay.
Stars Karen Gillan from Guardians of the Galaxy. She was also in Doctor Who. She plays Kaylee. You got Brenton Thwaites, who plays Tim. And then Annalise plays younger Kaylee, and Garrett plays younger Tim. And then you've also got Katie Sackhoff, who plays Mom. You've got Rory Cochrane, who plays Dad. And then I think I also put down Kate Segal, because she plays Marisol, the ghost that's haunting their house.
I also wrote down, and I think it's just because I've seen him in quite a few things now, James Lafferty plays Michael.
Oh, the fiance.
Yeah.
Yeah. What else has he been in?
He's in, he looks a lot different now.
Okay. Because I didn't recognize him at first.
He's in The Haunting of Hill House.
Yes, he is in The Haunting of Hill House.
And then the thing that I remembered him from was, it's a little embarrassing. One Tree Hill.
What's One Tree Hill?
It's a really shitty sitcom from the early thousands.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Holy shit. You're right. He looks way different.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like kind of a...
What?
Yeah. He's kind of like a nerdy looking, whatever, stereotypical generic white guy in Oculus. But when you look him up, it's like... Damn.
You gotta look up this dude.
Yeah, please, for the love of God, look him up.
He should never shave his face ever again.
No, and like this? Hello.
Is that on IMDb?
Yeah, this one's on bullshit. Yeah.
We're just like hitting on this dude right now.
Yeah. He's he put in the work.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. I didn't write down a brief synopsis for this one. Not going to lie. Finished it about 15 minutes before I got off work.
That's cool. I think I could probably take the reins on this one.
Hell yeah.
I've seen this movie several times now. And this movie's kind of fun because there's kind of like two timelines that overlap in this movie. So it centers around a brother and a sister, Kaylee and Tim, who suffered a really traumatic event in their childhood where they watched their dad torture their mom and then try and kill the both of them. And Tim ends up shooting Dad in self-defense, and he goes to a mental institution until he's 21. And he's in there, I don't think they say how old they are, but I'm going to guess they're probably like 11 or 12.
Yeah.
They're probably just right on the cusp of teenagehood.
Yeah, I'd say like somewhere between being just a standard child and being an adolescent,
somewhere around that.
Yeah.
So, you know, he spent like well over a decade just like in a mental institution. And his sister, she went into foster care. And so when they reunite, Tim gets released from the mental institution, and Kaylee has had all of this time to develop a plan for what she believes is like the reason that their family fell apart. And she believes that it's due to this haunted mirror that lived in their house. And so it's kind of like, it's a parallel story that's talking about what happened to these two kids the first time that they were haunted. And then them also having this parallel story of them trying to like defeat the mirror in real time. But they also play this kind of fun dichotomy where like, the sister fully believes that the mirror is evil and has like a revenge plan to destroy it, to prove that it's evil in the first place and then destroy it. And brother is completely like not on the same page, doesn't believe that the mirror is actually evil, and truly is just along for the ride because he wants to bond with his sister.
Yeah.
And might even like feel guilty that she didn't get the same resources and help that he did.
Yeah. I feel like it is a combination of a couple of things, because early on in the movie, there is a statement that's made by Tim's psychiatrist where he's like, you have to remember, like, you've had all of these resources to work through this over the last however many years.
Right.
And your sister hasn't. So just be cautious and make sure that you're protecting yourself when you're speaking about these things or when you're approaching your sister again.
Yes.
And
yes.
So I think there is that thing where he has that tinge of guilt of, you know, I've had all of this help, even though it's because there was blame that was placed on me for part of this. Mm-hmm. I have had this help. Mm-hmm. And then I think another part of it is that he's gone through all of these years of essentially therapy taking away the thought that that was something that was haunted and that it was more just like a broken family system that Absolutely. Ended in this tragedy.
Yeah.
And he wants to kind of prove to her at the same time, like, you're still fixated on this. But this isn't reality. Reality is what I've processed, and I want to help you through that.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I agree with you, right? Because yeah. I can see it from Tim feeling guilty that Kaylee didn't get the same help.
Yeah.
And also very much like in this mental institution, they're not going to subscribe to the idea that a mirror is haunted and killing people.
Yeah.
So they're going to find a rational reason for why these things happened. And they're going to make Tim believe those things. And so he's like, he knows what actually happened that's true to the, like, the story that he's been told yeah. all of these years.
Yeah.
And he just desperately wants his sister to reach the same conclusion. And I agree with you with that quote that the doctor had said. It was something specifically about how, like, it's important for you to bond with your sister and to create a relationship with her, but there is nothing more important than protecting your recovery.
Yeah.
Because it is like, just because you've done all of this work doesn't mean it can't be undone
yeah.
if you but backslide and you indulge any delusions that she may have. But I don't think the doctor knew at that point like that Kaylee had an obsession still with the mirror. I think he was more thinking of like a general sense of just like,
yeah.
your sister might be a little damaged and just make sure that you're not, you know, overextending yourself to like yeah. bond with her.
Absolutely. Cause there's layers to it also where it's mm-hmm. like, yeah, she had this traumatizing thing happen to her too. And in a way, even more traumatizing because she was actually about to be a victim at mm-hmm. the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the psychiatrist was like very much leaning into the, like, you need to protect yourself. But the psychiatrist is also presenting what is going to be the clinical version of the story.
Yeah.
And she's presenting what is the reality of the story.
Yeah.
And those things don't go hand in hand.
No.
Yeah.
No. They completely contradict each other.
Yeah.
Which is why I think the doctor was like, be careful. Oh, and yeah. even though, like, I don't think he knew anything about the mirror.
No.
I really don't. Like, I think when Tim was initially brought in, they were, everybody was under the impression that dad had just gone crazy and had
yeah.
hurt everybody.
Yeah, because the kids knew about the mirror, but it didn't seem like they had necessarily placed
the blame
on it yet.
Yeah, it wasn't really yeah. until, like, the very last altercation before that night.
Yeah.
And I think it was that night, actually. Like, it was that night that everything happened and dad and mom died. I think that was the same night that they tried to attack the mirror with the golf clubs and it didn't work.
Yeah.
I think beforehand they didn't have the opportunity or they mm-hmm. didn't know, like, they didn't know that the mirror was the thing that was causing it.
Yeah, because for a while they thought the root of the issue was just this lady who was in dad's office.
Yeah.
They didn't really connect that, like, that started occurring after a mirror was there or like Absolutely. That sort of thing, which yeah. like, why would they?
Why
I don't
would
think they?
They
even saw it. They might've walked past it being moved in, but I think that was about it.
Well, yeah. Yeah. You think about it, like, they had just moved to this house. And so any furniture that was brought in, like, kids don't give a shit what no. furniture's being moved into the house. But I was even thinking to myself when I was watching this recently, you know, when they moved to this new place, the mom and dad are having conversations back and forth, right? Mm-hmm. And the mom is confused when she sees the mirror. She's like, wait a second. Like, I didn't know we were going to turn our house into a showroom. And he says, well, but you said new house, new furniture, and you didn't want IKEA stuff. You wanted stuff that was like, had a history and had an antique quality to it.
Yeah.
And so I just found that interesting because I wasn't really sure like where they had even found the mirror in the first place.
Yeah.
Because it seemed like dad was in software. Like yeah. that's what his job was in software. And mom just seemed like a stay-at-home mom. So like, where the fuck did they get this like ornate, super gothic mirror that was probably not cheap because, you know, I think Kaylee had said that it had just like passed from auction house to auction house. So it wasn't like going to a Goodwill. It had enough value that people, or history, that people were like continuously selling it in these bigger areas, like these higher class areas.
Yeah. And I thought it was also super interesting to see how, and it gives you a little bit of insight at the end as to how this worked out this way. But it's super interesting that the mirror eventually gets everything tied to it. Yeah. And then that influences Kaylee to then become an antique auctioneer. Or not auctioneer, but like an antiques dealer, essentially.
Absolutely. And to work in the auction house. Yeah, like, we don't even know what her job is, but she works there so that she might have the opportunity to see it again.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, you see that, even though it was a horrendously traumatic experience, you also see that being formative for where she is taking her career, even.
Absolutely.
In an effort just to be able to attack that again.
I know. Isn't that crazy? Like, just that tenacity to, instead of just accepting that it was something horrible that happened and moved on with her life, she very much used it as like the catalyst, if that's the right word, to really like to really make her life decisions for her.
Yeah.
She didn't have to worry about what career she needed as long as it got her closer to the mirror. Yep. And I even thought to the point of like, can you imagine if she got together with Michael for that same reason? Because it seemed like he was connected to the auction house, not her.
Yeah.
And so I almost wonder if that was more of a manipulation. I'm not saying she didn't love him, but like if he initially was just a way to get closer to the auction house.
Yeah. Which it's pretty likely. Like, they don't give you a lot of insight into their relationship.
No, but she seemed very distant with him.
Yeah.
Like every time they were talking on the phone and she was like, hey, you know, could you actually call closer on the dot? Cause it's like 6 minutes past now. He's like, okay, I'll talk to you in 53 minutes. Click. And then
which was also curious because just your like run of the mill person wouldn't be so like rigid in the scientific method that they're using. Like this experiment was set up in such a very rigid, timely, well-executed manner.
Right.
And for just like a run-of-the-mill, whatever, antique dealer, what somebody who works in an auction house, whatever it is that her job title is, to then set up this elaborate experiment in an effort to try to like prove that this mirror is what's causing all of these things and then destroy it is wild.
It's crazy. It's a really crazy like plan as well as like the execution of the plan. And I think it's poignant when Tim asks her like, who are you talking to?
Yeah.
When she's talking to the camera and she says, I'm talking to all the people who called Dad a murderer and called you a murderer and called Mom crazy and, you know, and laughed at me and everybody who found out at school, even though nobody said anybody would, you know? And so I think that definitely helped fuel her passion as well. And it seemed like the plan that she executed and that she came up with was purely due to all of the research that she had done by following the timeline of the mirror and seeing like how it had killed other people and then coming up with like safeguards to make sure that those same things didn't happen to her.
Yeah. Just seeing the way that everything's set up, the scene where they're first walking into the room that has the mirror in it after, you know, she reconnects with Tim and then they end up going into the house. And she has this little moment where she talks about how like, I was the only person who went into college being a homeowner because I was the next of kin. There was only one other person who could have had it.
Right.
You were it gone.
Yeah.
And
so, both of our parents were gone.
And both of our parents were gone. So like, here I am having this house.
Mm-hmm.
And they even talk about like how, we're going to have to sell it, that sort of thing. But there's something we have to do first.
Yeah.
And then they walk into this room and it's, you know, cameras and a computer and there's an anchor attached to the ceiling and then
all the timers, all the kitchen timers.
There's like strategically placed like lanterns and plants, and there's even
dog. Don't forget about dog.
There's dog. There's in even like fail safes for all of these different things. Like, oh, these lights are hooked up to their own source. These lights are hooked up to their own source. Because then if one thing goes out, we have one thing as a backup. Mm-hmm. If they all go out, we know something's fucked up.
Yeah.
And it's like so well thought out.
I think she said even that she had two landlines too.
Yeah.
So that they couldn't use cellular data or whatever. But I don't think either of those landlines actually helped them.
No, I don't
think anything that happens inside of the house is it within the radius. So like, why the fuck did you, anyways,
honestly, not a damn thing that she did was going to stop anything.
No.
So she could have had all of the fail safes in the world behind her. This mirror was going to do what it was going
to
do.
I mean, it's been around for hundreds of years. Like it's had hundreds of years of time to develop strategies. And I mean, just like, we'll get into some of the scenes, but just like the amount of bodies that it's collected thus far.
Yeah.
And thinking about like how it works in general to like collect people and their souls and things. So it's had so many victims beforehand who like tried and failed at all of these different methods. Like, how are you possibly going to think of every scenario?
Yeah. And one thing I am going to say before we kind of dive into the meat of the podcast is that there are two things that really kind of bother me, and they have since I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I don't fuck with mirrors, and I don't fuck with windows at night. Those are my two things.
Like,
mirrors freak me the fuck out. I don't know what it is about them. I know that they're just a piece of glass and that, you know, they're reflective. Still freaks me the fuck out, especially at night. If I look in one, I'm like, I'm going to see something behind me.
Right.
And then I'm going to have to force myself to just be like, yeah, well, sucks to suck.
Yeah, I'm
guess
out.
I'm going to die or go to bed.
Exactly.
Like, those are my options. And then windows at night, I'm afraid that it's going to be a like the stranger situation. And this movie played on that so much. It even played on the windows at one part.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I'm so glad that I am unmedicated right now, because if I were to be watching this really zoned in on it, this would fuck with me.
Like, I'm glad I could like get distracted easily while watching this film.
Yeah. I'm glad that the disorder was also a protective mechanism this time around.
I'm glad that the lack of medication could bring you some solace.
Yeah. You know what? Everybody go get yourself some ADHD.
It's helpful. not really ever
except right now.
Except right now. Did you want to get into themes?
Yeah. The ones that I wrote down at least are fairly generic. Altered reality is a big one.
Like that one.
Yeah. It's also the connection between the last episode, because Autopsy of Jane Doe was very much so like a manipulated reality situation.
Absolutely.
I will say, just since we're on the topic, comparing the two, I think that Oculus was a lot more elaborate with the way that reality was manipulated.
Yeah.
I do think, though, that Autopsy of Jane Doe felt more solid.
Yeah.
In that manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's created to be that way.
Yeah.
Because in Oculus, there were certain ways that you could kind of check whether it was reality or not.
Yeah.
Somewhat easily.
Yeah.
They weren't always like for sure proof,
mm-hmm.
but there were ways that you could tell. Like, you could look through your phone, and if the camera showed something or didn't show something that you were seeing, you could tell that there was maybe a little bit of something going on.
Yep.
They also anticipated that reality wasn't what they were actually experiencing.
Absolutely.
Whereas in Autopsy of Jane Doe, they had no idea.
For a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So kind of dialing back, the next theme that I wrote down was just family trauma. There's a relationship that is playing out from the very beginning. And then as they go through these cycles of flashbacks in present day, those things both happening simultaneously, and then going back to those flashbacks, you can see individual family members and the relationships between all of them kind of creating a little bit more depth to the story. So there was family trauma, possession.
Yep.
It's always a fun one.
Yep.
And then the last one that I wrote down was just paranormal objects. Like,
yeah,
it's really fun to have a haunted house scenario where it's not a haunted house.
Exactly.
It's a haunted one thing.
Yeah. And I think that was the intention. We'll get into this with trivia, but that Mike wanted to create something that was reminiscent of 1408's hotel room.
Oh my God.
Right? Where you like, you had something that was plain and simple and things that like people encounter every single day. And how can you make that scary?
Like, yeah.
How do you make a mirror scary? You know, how do you make a hotel room scary?
I need to write that on our list because 1408 is actually one of my favorite horror movies ever.
It's good.
I love that
movie. I really do like it too, even though I do laugh through some parts of it.
Oh, I laugh through a lot of it.
It's entertaining. Yeah. It's super entertaining.
It is really entertaining. It's just such a good concept.
The short story is really good too.
Yeah.
I mean, if you haven't read the short story. The only other themes that I had written down that you hadn't said, you had said family trauma, but I also think that family is a big theme.
Yeah.
Just about loyalty, about promises, about like siblinghood and like what it means to like have a sibling that like you make pacts with when you're little kids and how that affects you when you get older.
Yeah.
And the other theme that I had written down was just faith.
Yeah.
Right? Just like faith in either seeing is believing or just faith in something supernatural that you can't explain.
Mm-hmm.
I think that those are both really powerful themes in this. Yeah. All right then. Well, we got through themes. Should we go into our favorite scene?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
I was having a really hard time, and I think it was because it keeps going through those cycles of like back in the day, today. Back in the day, today.
Yes.
Like
that it is sort of kind thing. Of jarring a little bit.
Yeah. So I was having a hard time deciding which one was actually going to be my favorite. And then this happened.
Okay.
And I know I had watched this movie before, but I didn't realize it until this scene because it had stuck with me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there's a moment where tensions kind of heat up and there's a lot of paranormal things that are kind of happening within a very short amount of time. A bunch of lights start blowing out, like that sort of thing. And after that settles a little bit, Tim goes to go change out some light bulbs mm-hmm. of the different lamps that mm-hmm. are throughout the house and throughout that crazy experimental room.
And the office, you mean?
Yeah, the office. He goes through and is changing out a bunch of light bulbs. And when he's changing them out, there's one that he leaves on like a shelf or an end table or something like that. And so Kaylee goes over to check that like the light bulb has been changed, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And she's eating an apple. And so she goes to like double check and she puts her apple down next to the light bulb. And she like does what she does. And then you see her grab the apple
mm-hmm.
and she goes and takes a bite. And then you hear a crack of glass.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows that she's actually bitten into a light bulb and her mouth is bleeding and she like starts to panic because she's like, oh shit, I've just bit a light bulb. And then Tim shows up behind her and is like, hey, like what's going on?
Right.
And she turns around and the piece of glass that she was holding is a piece of apple.
Mm-hmm.
There's no blood on her mouth or anything like that. She's holding the apple in her hand and it was just such a well-shot scene that you don't see any of the changes for any of that.
Right.
It was just like so crisp, so clean. And it was one of those ones that I saw and I was just like, wow.
Wow.
That was really good.
Yeah. I agree with you. That's a really good scene. I think that's one of the most memorable scenes from the movie is the apple scene.
Yeah.
And I just like Kaylee's face after Tim. Like, he's like, are you good? And she still has her mouth gaping open like there's still blood coming out of it.
Yeah.
And then she just kind of, like, wipes her mouth really quickly, and she's like, I'm fine. It's good. Yeah. It's good. I just thought I was fucking bleeding from a huge gash in my mouth, but it's good.
Yeah, no worries. I just thought that I had bitten a light bulb. It's fine.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just thought I would crunch on some 60 watts real quick, but right.
The sound design for that is really good.
Oh,
and
yeah.
When she like rolls the glass around in her mouth and like she can tell that there's this big jagged piece that's just stuck in the roof of her mouth. Yeah, that's some pure nightmare fuel if I've ever had any. Yeah.
But What was your favorite scene now that I can scrub that out of my brain?
You're going to find my... So my favorite scenes, I feel like, are always scenes that make me laugh out loud or like give me a lot of joy when I watch them.
I feel like mine tend to be like the comedic relief.
Yeah. Scenes. So my favorite scene for this is when Kaylee and Tim are fighting in the beginning. Kaylee's like going through her like origin stories, right? 1904, this happened. 1912, this happened. And she's like going through all of these different things. And Tim is getting more and more like exasperated, where he's like, this is just confirmation bias. You're just like going and looking for things that prove your theory. And he says something like, what's more likely, Kaylee? A haunted mirror is killing everybody, or you're just seeing like a bunch of coincidences that aren't there? Like, I can't quite remember what the quote is. I tried to look for it, but I couldn't find it.
Yeah.
But it's like right after this point, they're arguing back and forth. They're having this argument, and they're having this argument outside of the office.
Yeah.
And when they finally go back in, I don't remember what brings them back in, if it's a timer or something, but they go back in and all of the cameras that were facing towards the mirror are now all facing towards each other. And when they walk in and all the plants are dead that are in the room. Mm-hmm. And all of the cameras aren't facing each other. They're all turned around. And Kaylee runs up and she starts like, she goes on the camera and she says, I'm checking the camera footage right now. And she goes back like a minute and she's watching them have the same conversation, but it's not outside the room. It's inside the room. And they're just like, they're talking and they're also moving things. Like, they're moving the cameras. You can see mm-hmm. the plants dying. They're like moving stuff around, shuffling. And then they walk out of the room afterwards. And my favorite part, the part that makes me laugh, is when Kaylee, she's watching the video and she turns back to Tim and she's like, ha!
I also love that scene is almost the exact scene in Autopsy of Jane Doe when they look over like what's happened.
Right.
And they're doing all of this shit, doing nothing at the same time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. It gave us the exact same vibes, which is why we brought it up last time. So I just like, I had to bring that scene back up because it is my favorite scene. It is definitely the scene that I remember seeing in the movie and it just being like, oh my fucking God, that's so cool.
Yeah.
That's so cool to see two people have the exact same conversation they were just having, but now they're just like, you know, like almost like a monotone, not monotone, like a zombie-esque way that they're moving. And they're just like, they're doing what the mirror wants them to. And they're completely oblivious to it. And where it kind of breaks Tim a little bit psychologically, because he's like, oh my God, what the fuck? Like, that is not what I just remembered happening.
Yeah, and I didn't have agency.
Exactly. And yeah. Kaylee's on the opposite end where she's like, I just fucking proved my theory, bitch.
Yeah.
Like, I just fucking did it. I got on camera. Yes!
One thing I also really love about that scene, too, is that it almost kind of plants this seed in your head that what the mirror is doing is it's just taking away their agency. But it's a manufactured reality. It's not necessarily an artificial reality.
Yes.
And later on, things start happening where you're like, wait, they're not making this happen. This is artificial. And so it kind of toys with like different ways.
Yeah, it really does.
That can be interpreted.
Yeah, it really does. And it's really hard for them to be able to tell like what's real and what isn't real. Like, even when they think they're going outside and they're calling people, like they're not actually calling anybody. They're just calling the mirror. Like, the mirror is the one who's answering the phone for them. So it's just a very well played out shot that I really appreciated.
I do have a honorable mention for favorite scene.
Okay.
This was my second choice when Tim, I believe, yeah, it's Tim, goes outside to go like call for help. And when he calls, the police operator, dispatch, that's what it's called.
Yeah.
The dispatch person is like, you're going to have your dad call in. And it ties into the conversation that you hear earlier on.
Absolutely.
Where they call in. I think
when they're kids
and they're not calling the police. They're calling a psychiatrist.
They're calling doctors.
Yeah. They're calling doctors mm-hmm. and they're like, yeah, something's wrong. And saying specifically that like something's wrong with their mom.
Yeah.
And they're like, you're going to have your dad call.
Yeah. I appreciate that you brought that scene up because it is really cool. You don't hear the conversation when they're kids. You just hear Tim and he's like, okay, yeah. okay, bye. And then he looks at Kaylee and he's like, they said to have our dad call them back. And she says, just like the last doctor. And he says, exactly like the last doctor. Like they've been getting the same speech every single time they call. And it's cool because then when they flash forward, and this is a really, this is an interesting scene, right? Because Tim says to Kaylee, I called the police, they're on their way. And Kaylee's like, how do you know that that's true? And so when he calls back, he's like, hey, I just called like a minute ago. I'm a blah, blah, blah street. And the dispatcher reverts back and goes, oh, sorry, you're going to have your dad call.
Yeah.
And it kind of like, it does something else after that. Like it has some other garbled speech or something else. And that's when Tim is like, all right, fuck this. We're already outside. We're just going to sit here. We're safe. Like, and we can just let the kill switch just do its thing. And that's when they look in the house and they see them both standing in front of the mirror.
Yeah.
In front of, and Tim's just like, it's not real. It's not real. We're not actually in there. And Kaylee's like, but how do we know that? Like, we don't know that. Like,
yeah. And then to compound on top of all of that scene too, he had called the police.
That's what I meant.
They end up showing
up. That's what I mean. Yeah. It's like, that's what's kind of interesting is that the mirror allowed him to make that one phone call. Like it was almost like the mirror was like, all right, we're wrapping it up here.
Like, all right. Yeah.
Okay. I actually do want the police to come actually because I want them to show up so that they can, you know, catch him in the act, right?
That mirror might be one of my favorite horror movie villains. It's good.
It's real good. Oh, it's so good.
And it does some fucked up shit.
I got some trivia you'll really appreciate then.
Having somebody die of dehydration in a bathtub, that's fun. After ripping all their teeth out.
Yes.
That's also a nice little tidbit. There's a teeth thing with this mirror, because also there's the lady who dies from a quote miscarriage after she had ripped all of her teeth out with pliers and put them in the drawer.
Yes.
And it's just like, these are really twisted things that this mirror is doing. It's not just like random sudden deaths or anything like that.
No, it's torture.
It's torture.
Yeah. And yeah. I'm kind of curious why that is, if the mirror is kind of like Pennywise, or, you know, like where it gets more power from a soul that's suffered.
Yeah.
Maybe it gets more pleasure out of the food that it eats, or it like, it gives it more energy to consume things that have undergone trauma. It is also, it could also just be from a standpoint of like, if they just died magically in their sleep, that wouldn't be horrific. They all have to die in horrific ways. But I did like some of the ways that it killed people.
Yeah.
Dehydration in the bathtub. That lady who like completely mangled herself with a hammer.
Yeah.
Everything except for her right hand, because she needed it to swing the hammer. I thought that was pretty crazy. Or like,
and then dad's walking around with a hammer.
Yes. Yep. Or like the guy, there was like a college professor who it hung in his office. And one day he rushed at the painting with like a bat to like destroy it. And he stopped right before he got to it. And the students watched him just stand there staring at it for like a full minute. And then he dropped the bat and he turned around and he walked into oncoming traffic and died.
Yeah.
Just like kind of crazy stuff like that. And it's interesting too, because the mirror is also definitely a force that like kind of waits, like it waited for a while for Marie. Right. When Marie came in and was like looking for evidence that her husband was cheating on her. Right. And then it wasn't until she like kind of subconsciously threw something in the mirror's direction, not even at it, but it reacted so violently to that attack.
Yeah.
And punished her for it very quickly.
And it like immediately clocked a vulnerability an insecurity that she had and was just like, that's the ticket.
I think that's kind of what it does.
Yeah.
Like how it tortures its victims is it finds the things that really bother them the most. And I wonder if, because like every single person who dies of some sort of accident, and it's always like something that the mirror has forced that person to do.
Yeah.
To kill themselves or to kill their families or to do whatever.
One thing I'm realizing right this second is that this wasn't a movie that I felt like I was having the most fun watching, but this is probably one of my favorite episodes that we're recording because I feel like I'm getting more and more from it as we're talking about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I knew it would be a good movie for that reason. Yeah. Like it is good like discussion material.
It is. And now I'm excited to watch it again and be like, oh, Karina pointed this out and then this ties to this.
Yeah. Like, we'll just have to cover it again. Yeah. Should we do our scariest scenes?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
My scariest one, there's a lot of jump scares in this movie.
A lot of good ones, honestly.
A lot of, really decent ones. Mm-hmm. I had started with pointing out in my notes each time a jump scare happened and what the framework was for it. And then I quit because there was a lot of them.
So
the one that I ended up settling with, I don't think it's actually, no, it is intended to be a jump scare. So the point where kind of the storyline of the flashbacks and the storyline of the present day converge.
Yeah.
And there's even a moment where Kaylee is walking up the stairs and little Timmy is walking down the stairs.
Right.
And you can see these storylines are now parallel. And she's going up the stairs. And then I can't remember exactly what happens if she's just going into the room or something like that. But there's a moment where her, their mom, mm-hmm. when she's at her absolute worst, just pops up.
Yeah, Kaylee's going into her room for some reason.
Yeah.
I think it's honestly just because they're like, fuck this. I want to know what's going on. And so they go in to maybe they even hear her making noises or something.
Yeah, I can't remember what the exact setup is for it. But that was the only jump scare that I was watching it on my laptop at work. And that was the only jump scare that I was like, whoa.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All the rest of them, I could tell it was leading up to whatever, you know, but that was one that was almost just as she was just walking by and it was there.
Right. Yeah. I'm curious too. That was one of my honorable mention scenes. So I'm glad that you brought that up. Cause it definitely did really freak me out in the theater. I remember thinking to myself, I was like, holy shit, did he do all of this to her or did he just lock her up here and she's been doing this to herself?
Yeah.
Fucking crazy.
Fucking crazy.
Katie Sackhoff did so much with this character in this movie. I really appreciated some of those, not really scary scenes, but really tension building scenes. The one that I'm really thinking of is when Dad is gone, he's not there, and it's just Kaylee and Tim and Marie, and she's made them burnt grilled cheese, and she's just drinking cup of wine after cup of wine, and she's just fucking angry. You can tell she's angry.
Yeah.
And she's interrogating both of her children about the woman in Dad's office. And that to me was it was such a good scene. Cause it was even if there wasn't anything supernatural going on, he was just having an affair with whomever. This scene right here is something that is so real for so many people where they just have to deal with toxic lives, toxic marriages that they're having to watch, or just flat out verbal and physical abuse, right? Mm-hmm. And I found that to be a really poignant scene that then kind of led up into her reveal scene.
Yeah, and there's that's post her finding a note that had Marisol scribbled all over it.
Well, yeah.
So she thinks she's attributing that to whoever the affair is.
Absolutely.
And she's here's the evidence that I need. Now I just need more information from the kids.
Yes.
And
oh, yeah.
I love how every single part of this is so thought out too, because you wouldn't really, I guess, assign anything to it if you just were to see the shitty dinner and she's drinking wine.
Yeah.
Unless earlier they hadn't shown them around the dinner table and it's this elaborate, well-made meal and it looks even though Dad's being distant, the rest of the family still looks like a solid unit.
Absolutely. And it looks like this is something that is not out of the ordinary.
Yeah.
It's something that is very routine and very regular.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so for it to go to such a stark difference.
Yeah. For it to go to now Dad's not distant, he's gone.
Gone.
Mom's drunk.
Yeah.
She's interrogating the kids. They're having shit food.
Yeah. And she's being incredibly abusive to them by not only not caring for them. Cause I could see the defense of well, I made you food. It's it's fucking burnt, bro. That is not nutrition for your children. You know, you couldn't even stay sober enough to cook them dinner or to at least order pizza.
Yeah.
Come on.
And that is such a, it might not even be grilled cheeses. It might just be burnt toast.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something like that. But that's such a Flanaganism too, where it's he doesn't rely on just whatever the eye is drawn to. He relies on setting the scene completely. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just liked that it had nothing to do with anything that was paranormal or supernatural. This is something that very well just could have happened just regularly. It just sucks that there was also a supernatural component that was compounding on top of it.
Yeah. It's a great scene.
Yeah, it's a fucking, it's a good scene. That was just, that would be an honorable mention for me, even if it wasn't on like my favor, my scary list. Did you have any other honorable mentions besides, you know, mom reveal?
You know, I could go through like almost all of the jump scares in this movie are pretty solid.
Yeah.
They are a little gratuitous sometimes, but they're still effective.
They're still, yeah, and, they're still really good.
Yeah. Even to the point where when they're about to ship the mirror to the house and she's down there with like the moving guy and he's like, well, I'm going to go grab these things. And she's like, yeah. And, you know, I'll babysit it all the way home. Right. And she looks in the mirror and there's like these two figures with sheets over them. And then she kind of looks, sees them, and she's like, all right, whatever. And then looks back to the mirror and then there's three behind her. And so she goes to like pull the sheets off the
One of them moves.
One of them moves. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she goes to like pull the sheets off of them. And it's like, oh, this is just a bust and like that sort of thing. And you expect that one of these things is going to be the bad in that scenario. Yes. And then it's just the moving guy coming back being like, you're all set.
And she's like, and he's like, whoa, are you okay?
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, just long day.
that was out of all of them. I think that's probably the honorable mention for me that would have been like my second one.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's either that one or I think it's the very first jump scare in the movie when dad goes down in the middle of the night to get a juice box out of the fridge.
Yeah.
And then he's walking past and you just see Marisol.
Fucking see Marisol. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he kind of notices and he turns around and she's not there.
Yeah. It was just subtle enough that it catches you off guard.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. If you're paying attention, right, you kind of go, whoa, oh.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's also, and it's probably intended to be this way too, where when mom gets to her worst, she looks a lot like Marisol. And so those two characters can kind of get a little misconstrued at times.
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, and I think Marisol's character does kind of take like a bit of a back burner. Like she is the most prominent ghost. But other than hearing her backstory and then just kind of seeing her in these just like jump scare moments, she doesn't really get a whole lot. Like there's no other character development. She's just there for the scare or to be like manipulative or what have you.
Yeah. Did you have any more honorable mentions?
Yeah, I've got one other honorable mention and then I'll do my scariest scene.
Yeah.
So I think my other honorable mention that I'll say is when Tim is being taken into the police car at the very end. And he's shouting, it was the mirror. It was the mirror. He looks back at the house and you can see all of the ghosts.
Yeah.
Just standing there and all their eyes are reflective, like a cat's eyes would be at night. That part I remember watching in the movie, like physically making me jump, making me go, oh my God.
Yeah.
And then like, I think the second moment, like you initially just see the ghosts, but then I think when Tim looks back, like you see Kaylee and mom and dad all there too. Like they also become a part of the like troop of ghosts.
Yeah.
The mirrors collected.
The Oculus's legacy.
Yeah. Yeah. And wouldn't it be interesting? I had heard there was like a deleted scene that got taken out because it just wasn't really relevant, but that Kaylee would be the next ghost that would like haunt the next person who inherited the mirror.
She'd be a pretty busted looking ghost too.
Yeah. Right. Would she look like the bent neck lady?
Yeah. Would she look like bent neck or would she?
Wait, have you seen Haunting of Hill House?
Yeah. Kind of.
I was like, I don't even. Do you know who the bent neck lady is?
I do know who the bent neck lady is, not because of watching it, because of seeing content of it.
Oh.
Because I have technically watched it, but it was in a fever situation.
Do you know who actually was the bent neck lady?
No.
It was Nell.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a really fucking good episode. So she finds out that she's been the ghost that's been haunting her whole life.
I need to rewatch it.
It's fucking good.
It was literally while I was like
it's fucking good
one
as
of the sickest I've been in my entire life.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah. So I should definitely rewatch that.
Finally, my actual scariest scene for me was the last stand for Kaylee and Tim with their parents. When they're in the room and it's mirroring the beginning scene when Kaylee and Tim are in the room and they're looking through the keyhole and they see dad or mom like walking by and Kaylee looks at Tim and goes, okay, we're going to have to be really brave. I got the club. Like I'm going to open the door and you're just going to run. And Tim is like, what happens if they're there? And she says, don't worry about that. Your job is just to run for the front door. And like, it was just so baller the way that like these two kids, these poor two kids that are just like, I got to run through my house from my homicidal parents. And so, you know, Kaylee opens the door and Tim runs out. And I think mom comes out pretty immediately and they both scream, but they keep running. And I think yeah. Kaylee like gets a hit in on mom too, just like whacks her. And they end up getting split up because I think Kaylee gets cornered into a bedroom and Tim has to run downstairs. And so poor Kaylee's got to jump out her window, yeah. right, to get away from mom, and then realizes that Tim's still inside. And so she's got to go around and go save him. And so like that for me, because like it was probably the most high tension point, and also just feeling from the perspective of these two children that yeah. are like, they're just trying to survive and trying to survive from your two parents who like are supposed to protect and care for you.
Yeah. There is one thing that I can say about the character of Kaylee already, but on top of that, the way that Karen actually like plays her mm-hmm. is that is a bad bitch.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, Kaylee, although she is, like, very hyper-fixated almost to, like, a mentally detrimental way absolutely. on this scenario.
Absolutely.
She is a bad bitch, and she approaches this as a bad bitch mm-hmm. and continues to be a bad bitch yes. the entire time. Yes.
I agree with you. I feel like adult Kaylee kind of got lost in the sauce a little bit.
Yeah.
Where she got a little bit too over her head.
Yeah.
In my opinion. Because I even noticed, like, about 3/4 of the way through the movie when she starts to get frustrated and she starts to like break things and starts to kind of go against her own rules. That's why her fiance died, if we're being honest, because she just kind of like got a little bit too underwater.
Yeah.
But I do really like the portrayal of young Kaylee from, yeah. I think her name was Annalie, just her last name starts with a B.
Oh, Annalie Basso.
Basso.
Yeah, I think that's Basso. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. The way that she portrayed young Kaylee, like young Kaylee had like a fucking fighter spirit. In yeah. her. Like she was willing to go down with a fight. She was not going to go out just into the quiet night.
Yeah.
And was willing to like put herself on the line just to make sure that her brother got out.
Yeah.
And I like that moment of when she gets out, she's the first one to get out and she realizes where's brother. And so instead of going to the neighbor's house or calling somebody, she's like, I gotta go get him. Like, I'm not just gonna leave him in there.
Yeah. And then those roles are, in a almost minor way, those roles are a little reversed.
Yes.
When they have to reapproach it later on, where Tim kind of has this approach of like, oh, I have the tool set and the mental fortitude to be able to approach this and be like, hey, you're going a little too far.
Right.
And kind of be the protector in this situation.
Oh, yeah.
And then still doesn't work out that way. But like,
but he tried his best.
He tries, yeah.
But I do agree with you. There is a couple of moments where like Kaylee needs him in order to keep going. Like, especially after Michael dies.
Yeah.
And she just can't, she doesn't know how to continue to go on. And so it's really him that kind of pulls her out of that darkness and is like, look, we got to keep going. Like, yeah. I know you're scared, but it's going to be fine. And I think she says something like, you just have to tell me that he's gone. And she's talking about dad, because dad's ghost is somewhere in the house. Yeah. And he's like, I promise you, like, he's gone. And they open the door and he's right there. No, I swear to God, he's not there.
Yeah. Oh, fuck.
So that was all our scariest stuff. Do you want to get into trivia?
Yeah.
Let's fucking do it. I'm quickly going to shout out this video that I watched on YouTube because I felt like it provided a lot of trivia that I had not heard of before for this movie. It was called Exploring Oculus Through the Laser Glass, and it's by Good Bad Flicks. It's like a 25-minute video, and okay. I just highly recommend it. Like, if you liked Oculus, because it kind of gives you some insight about like how they made the movie, how they chose the cast, where like the origin for the movie came from, kind of where like Mike Flanagan kind of started his career, and like how he created this movie by not settling and by really like waiting for the right moment to release it. Mm-hmm. So it was just really good. So specifically, a couple of the things that I learned in that video was that like Flanagan purposely waited to make this film for like at least 3 years, I'm pretty sure, because he wanted to avoid it being in like a found footage style. When he initially pitched it, he really liked 1408. He wanted to create a horror movie that had like some sort of like inanimate object was the point of horror. But all of these producers that he brought it to, they were like, yeah, we really like the concept, but we want it to be found footage. And he's like, that's not how I want to tell this story, because found footage is completely objective. You have to believe what you see when you're watching found footage.
Yeah.
This movie completely relies on you not being able to believe what you're actually watching.
Yeah.
And so that's why he banked it for a while. He's like, okay, these studios don't, they don't see my vision, so I'm just going to pull back on it. And he ended up making a different movie beforehand that he crowdfunded, I think on like Kickstarter. It was Absentia. He just didn't trust production companies at that point to really like trust his artistic style. So he started a Kickstarter for this other movie, shot a couple of scenes for it. It was actually crowdfunded in like less than a month. I think it was by late June he ended up filming it under his own production company. And then it was after that point, I think he was worried because there was another movie in like 2008 called Mirrors that came out, and he was worried that like that was going to have too many similarities to his movie, but it didn't. And so he ended up pitching it again. And the next couple of companies that he took it to were like, we absolutely love it. The only thing we ask you is that you don't do it found footage. And he was like, fuck yeah, let's do it.
Like, thank God.
Finally, somebody understands yeah. me. So, yeah.
Finally, somebody's actually like looking through my lens.
Exactly. Like people understand like what story I'm trying to tell. He also had said that Oculus was actually like the haunted mirror. The Lasser Glass was actually like a 9-part story that Flanagan had created with a friend of his, like a writer friend of his. And the story for Oculus was number 3 in the Lasser Glass collection. It was called The Man with the Plan. And it was just initially about one dude knew of the Lasser Glass and what power it had. And he wanted to find out a way to exploit it and like prove it, kind of like a Nope, and also to like destroy it.
Okay. I can't remember what it was that I was looking up, but I had Googled something quickly about it. And there was a like horror review website that said something along the lines of like, this is only a very small fraction of the full story that was created for this object.
Yeah.
And it leaves a lot of room open for them to create sequels or prequels about it.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
And then we never saw one, which I actually appreciate, because I think it's a really good standalone thing.
Yep.
And I hate when like things get the Conjuring treatment.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they just get it gets real convoluted. Even the Saw treatment.
Oh, yeah.
When it gets picked up by a different production company and you're pumping out new sequels every year, and it's no longer fun.
Yeah.
It no longer makes a lot of sense. And if we're being honest, I mean, Flanagan's career took off after this.
Yeah.
If he spent a decade just creating all of the Oculus films and he didn't create any of the stuff that like I fucking love now, I couldn't imagine.
No.
I couldn't imagine a life where like there's no Haunting of Hill House, there's no Hush, there's no like, you know,
The Fall of the House of Usher.
Yeah. Fucking Gerald's Game.
Black Mass, I believe is him.
Oh, Midnight Mass.
Midnight Mass, yeah.
Yeah. Midnight Mass is fucking so good. The Haunting of Bly Manor. We could go on. The Midnight Club, like
he's created like pretty much all of the iconic horror TV shows.
Yeah. And is still creating more. I mean, he did like Dr. Sleep. He's doing another couple of miniseries too, I think, for Stephen King.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're doing one on Carrie.
Ooh.
I think it's Carrie that they're doing.
Interesting. Yeah. Another piece of trivia is that this film was filmed in 24 days. They did have to do a couple of reshoots, but like the main meat of the film was shot in just under a month.
Nice.
Which is pretty incredible.
That is incredible. When you think about how like we just watched Wicked, and granted they made two parts of it, but it took like, I think it's like 3 or 4 years or something like that they've been working on that. Yeah.
Oh shit. Well, and I was wondering too, like this movie was filmed in 24 days, but that's not how long it took to make it.
No.
Right? Like that's just like what it took to like get all of the shots, and then they had editing and post and audio and blah, 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 and marketing and release and all this stuff. Like it took a lot longer than that to actually make the film, but like filming days was only 24. Director Mike Flanagan has included the Oculus mirror as an Easter egg in most of his movies and TV shows. It's in the basement of Ouija Origin of Evil. It's the headboard in Gerald's Game. It's on the walls in The Haunting of Hill House, and it's in the Overlook Hotel in Dr. Sleep.
Huh.
It's also in Bly Manor. I'm pretty sure it's in Midnight Mass. It's been in like pretty much everything that he's made.
You want to hear something really bad?
Oh.
You know how I feel about The Shining.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never watched Dr. Sleep.
I wouldn't. But that's because it has one of my lines in it. So I've heard Dr. Sleep is really, really fucking good.
Yeah.
But it has a very extended like torture scene in it of a child. And like, I can't watch it. I heard that scene was so graphic and violent that the adult actors, whenever like they'd yell cut for that scene, the adult actors would like, they needed a second to like get over the trauma, because it's just essentially them slowly torturing this young boy to death by like breaking all of his limbs and like gouging his eyes out and doing just horrible shit to this poor little boy. And so the boy, whenever they'd yell cut, he'd get up and he'd go trot over, he'd go like skip over to his little spot and he'd drink his juice box and he'd eat his M&Ms. And all the adults were just like,
yeah, I didn't even find out until probably a couple years ago that they continued with the storyline of The Shining.
Of The Shining, yeah.
I had no idea.
And, well, because it's based off the novel.
Yeah, and I just like, no, whatever.
You're like, eh.
I like it by itself.
Well, I don't know. I didn't read the novel, but I could see a lot of people like very much turning away from that and just being like, exactly with what you said about Oculus, where you're like, it's so good on its own. Why do we need extra story after that?
Yeah.
But to each their own. Like, yeah. Some people really like Dr. Sleep. I'm sure some people would really like an Oculus sequel. Not obviously following the same characters, but like following the Lasser Glass.
Yeah.
As it, you know, moves.
And I feel like
from place to place.
Yeah. And like when it comes to The Shining, a lot of people who I feel like watched the movie and like that was all that they consumed of it.
Yeah.
They want to see what happens.
Yeah.
Like they want to see where Danny goes.
Goes afterwards.
Yeah.
And knowing that he was special and had some other type of ability. And I think in Dr. Sleep, it becomes a bit more like, not creature feature, but it becomes a bit more like a bit less of like a paranormal event haunting type situation and more of a like you're being actively hunted by this group of people and you're also trying to thwart them, but it's like all mind games.
Interesting.
Because like that's kind of what The Shining is the ability to like manipulate people with your brain.
Yeah.
Right. So
interesting.
Anyways, we could watch it at some point. I would watch it for this podcast.
Yeah.
I will cringe for that one scene and probably cry, but it's fine. It's just a movie. It's fine.
What we could do is we could just watch it together.
Yeah.
We'll get aggressively high.
Oh, yeah.
And then when it starts to lead up to that scene, I'm sure we'll be able to tell.
I'll know.
And then I'll be like, hey, you want to go make some popcorn?
Yeah. Just let the scene play out in the background. Let me see here. I thought this was really cool. And this comes from this video that I watched too. But Karen Gillan was the first choice by Mike Flanagan to play this role because he really liked her in Doctor Who. And she was just about to end her run on that show. And so he kind of pulled her at the last second. And this was actually her first American role.
Nice.
Which I find to be very crazy because I didn't notice that she was British until I watched her in an interview.
Yeah.
Like I would not have even been able to tell.
Yeah.
She seemed, and I think my first experience with Karen Gillan was in Guardians of the Galaxy. And she definitely doesn't sound British as Nebula.
Yeah. That had to have been my first exposure to her also, because I've never watched anything Doctor Who.
Right.
And I was sat down and made to watch Guardians of the Galaxy by Chase. We got aggressively high.
Oh, yeah.
And sat there and watched all of it.
Oh, I've told you, I went to the movie theater with Harrison and Eve, and I dropped acid while watching the second Guardians of the Galaxy movie. And that was the best fucking movie I've ever seen.
I want to go to like the Omnimax theater and take some mushrooms and watch like Planet Earth.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Or, yeah.
Where it's fully
everywhere, like 360 view. Oh God, I'd watch like a planetarium event for that.
Oh shit, that'd be so good.
Let's see. Oh, this is fun. Oh, you're gonna like this. Okay. To avoid confusion in writing two different timelines in the script, Mike Flanagan deliberately wrote the scenes in the past in italics.
I like that.
I like that. I kind of like that.
See how these ones look funky?
Yeah,
that's
right?
That's the old ones.
That's the old ones. When Karen is showing her brother previous photos of victims of the Laser Glass, one of the final victim photos is actually a photo of writer-director Mike Flanagan's wife, actress Kate Siegel. Which we knew
cute.
That. Mm-hmm. But they were not married when they made this film.
Not at that moment.
Oh, this is kind of cool too. Making a film centered around a mirror comes with a whole set of production difficulties because everything is reflected in the mirror. And they had to use very like clever kind of tilting of the mirror, tilt it like a couple of degrees left or right so that it would never reflect what it's supposed to be reflecting. And it would always give you this sense of like unease. Like you should be able to see a certain reflection in it, but you can't just because of the way that it's manipulated.
It is interesting how throughout the whole movie, you can see that it's reflecting the room.
Yes.
But it is like an uncanny valley situation where it's like that has the color scheme of the room. But that's the only thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, I have one other thing that I wanted to bring up that I don't know if it's in here, but it's like an honorable mention scene. The final scene right before Kaylee dies and she's in the office and she sees it's young Kaylee and she sees her mom in the mirror and they do that whole scene where like she runs up and they hug each other. They actually did that practically. So they took the glass out of the mirror and they made an identical set on the other side of the mirror. And they had the two actresses hug, like, in the set. And then they just put the mirror there in post, like, digitally.
That's
like, the
so
reflection.
Cool.
Yeah, I thought that was so cool.
That is so cool.
And such, like, a clever, like, that was such a clever way to lure her into just the perfect placement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was watching this scene, and I was having a little bit of a hard time being able to, like, see exactly what was happening after Kaylee died because it shows her like, you know, face to face with the mirror anchor, that whole situation.
Right.
But when Tim goes up and is like looking at her and you can kind of see that his view kind of like pans a little bit.
Uh-huh.
There's a fraction of a second where I feel like you're seeing like Kaylee's reflection in the mirror because she's like pinned up against it.
Yeah.
But then I feel like you can see the mom for a second. And I couldn't tell if that was me mistaking her for her mom or if Tim sees the mom in that situation too.
You're making me want to go back and watch it. That's super fun.
Yeah.
I like that. I do really like that scene. It should have been one that we brought up in either our fave or scariest, but it is a really fun scene where you have this duality of like, you see Kaylee, she's going through all this trauma and then she sees her mom and there's this like lighthearted, warm-hearted moment where like they're hugging, right? And she gets to reconnect. But then you're simultaneously you're seeing Tim in the same room and he finally I think to him he just sees an empty room, right? And he's just like, fuck this, I'm over it. And he just takes the timer and he just like winds it down to zero so it'll just like kill the mirror. And then it like immediately right after it hits, you don't see the impact, you just hear Kaylee like gargling on her own blood. And then he runs up and kind of realizes like, oh fuck. Oh no.
Yeah, because he even checks the monitors.
Yeah.
Before he like winds it down, he checks the monitors to see if she's there.
And she's not.
And she's not.
Which is crazy.
And then he winds it down and then you see the monitors again and she's there.
So I wonder, like, how did the mirror do that? It just made him see something different for just that fraction of a second. Damn.
And
I fucking love this movie,
man. And the thing is, you don't even, like, I didn't even feel like we needed to bring up that scene because what asserts itself better than a 20-pound anchor?
Yeah, come on.
It knows it belongs in this conversation, and it's there without us even
and
having to say it.
It fucking knows it. The 20-pound Danforth anchor.
That's right.
With an extra 20 pounds on barbells attached to a pulley system that's attached to a kitchen timer, a manual kitchen timer.
So that there's no electricity in play.
Yeah. Let me see if there's any other... I found this funny too. So they had to shoot a couple of additional scenes for the movie. I'm trying to remember which one was it. I believe it was the scene of Kaylee in the basement when she had to do the whole thing with the three statues when one of them moved. That was one of the scenes they had to like actually film because they hadn't done it originally. And Karen Gillan had to wear a wig for some of those scenes because she had cut her hair for Not Another Happy Ending, I think like another movie that she had signed up for. But when they had reshot those scenes, Mike Flanagan was like, could have been worse. Like not even 6 months later, she got Nebula in Guardians of the Galaxy and she shaved her head. So if they would have waited any longer, she would have had to wear a whole wig.
Yeah.
Just the front.
Oh my gosh. That's so fun that she just had like a clip on bang sort of situation.
Yeah. I think there's only one scene that you can really tell that she's wearing a wig. And other than that, like it's hard to notice. But yeah, that's it. That's it for trivia.
Awesome. Yeah. Should we get into our ratings?
Let's get into our ratings.
So for my rating, the weapon that I chose was a broken pot for a plant.
Yeah. Broken planter pot.
Yeah. Broken planter pot. I didn't actually write down my scores, so I'm just going to wing it. I feel like this conversation may skew a little bit.
Because it was super boring when you first watched it, wasn't it?
It was. Like, it wasn't necessarily that it was boring. I think it was just that I was finding it a little lackluster after watching The Autopsy of Jane Doe.
Fair.
But now that we've talked about it, it's edging up closer to The Autopsy of Jane Doe.
You're seeing more, like, details, and you're like, wait a second. This movie had a lot of detail in
it. Yeah. Which, shouts out to the director of Autopsy of Jane Doe, because if you can even hold a torch to Mike Flanagan,
absolutely,
you're doing damn good.
Oh, absolutely. Damn good. Definitely.
So thinking about quality for this one, I'm very similar to you in the way that like I find plot holes. I don't necessarily like to like point them out if I'm watching them or anything like that. Because I don't want to shatter the illusion. Don't want to break the mirror or anything like that, you know, if it'll let me. But I was watching this trying to find holes and I couldn't really find any. And that's one of the things that factors into quality for me is continuity. And
absolutely.
I feel like this is like top shelf with continuity.
I agree with you. Even with like all of the back and forth.
Yeah.
And the kind of the ways that like the timelines bleed together.
Yeah.
Is really clever because you literally could have just like, he could have just made it very black and white.
Yeah.
This is the past. This is the present. And you know, they don't ever like intersect, or you get to the point where like you're confused. You're like, where am I at in the timeline? Like I always kind of liked it when sometimes the actors would be reversed, but it would be a different timeline, like you were saying with some of the earlier scenes of like the younger version walking past the older version down the stairs, or like Kaylee looking around a corner and seeing like young Tim sitting on the floor, like things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Like all of that was just so well done and so thought out. And then to see also when that convergence happens and you get to see both of those things happening simultaneously, like, of course, there's an age difference. So it's a little easier to be able to blend those things together when it's like, oh, that's obviously young Tim because he's significantly younger.
Absolutely.
But to have those separate parts running so well together and then come together in a way that feels like such a well-oiled machine.
Yeah.
It was just really beautifully done. So I'm going to say that mixed with the ability that like, even as an audience, you can't trust what you're seeing.
Absolutely.
Like it's one thing when you can see that the characters in something aren't able to be, or like aren't able to rely on what they're seeing and that sort of thing.
They can't be objective because they're too close to the problem.
Exactly. Yeah. But like, when you as a watcher also have no fucking clue what's happening because you think you know something and you definitely don't.
Absolutely.
That just adds a whole nother layer to it. So I think as far as quality is concerned, I'm actually going to give this one like a 4.5 out of 5.
Okay.
I think there, I can't even identify what would give it the extra half point.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I know I'm saving that for like something.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I get you. I mean, I love all of the little tiny details in this movie.
Yeah.
Like the more you watch it and the more you kind of see some of the kind of background and set information that is not spelled out for you. It's just purely there as like a little, like an Easter egg for you to discover on your next watch.
Yeah, I'm trying to think about what would give it that extra half point. And I really can't. I think it would be one of those things that, like, I would have to see it.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how I would give it that extra half point either. Because, you know, I didn't give this a 5 out of 5. Like,
yeah.
You know, but I'm trying to think of, like, where the faults actually are. Besides maybe just some of the scares feeling cheap. But they really didn't even feel that cheap, if we're being honest.
I think I know what it is for me. I think it's between a 4 and a 4.5. And the reason why is because the reflective eyes feel a little like that's too CGI.
It is, right? Yeah. I agree with you. Yeah. It's supposed to be creepy. I understand why it's supposed to be creepy, but that is really the only thing that I can give that I don't know why. It just kind of looks silly.
Yeah. Like, it kind of pulls me out of it a little bit.
Like, at first it's jarring, but then the more you see it, maybe that's the problem.
Yeah.
It's like if you just saw it at the end of the movie, when you just saw all of them just in the window with Kaylee, I think that would have served a bigger purpose than if you would have seen them. Because you see those ghosts pretty often.
Yeah.
Pretty often. I might be blanking and thinking of, like, Insidious, where you just, like, see a lot of dead people. But
you do see them.
I'm pretty sure you do. Yeah. You at least see Marisol very often. But I'm pretty sure there's even a moment before the very ending scene where you see more than one ghost.
Yeah,
in the household, or in the past, or whatever. So,
yeah,
I agree with you.
I think that would be the one thing that could kind of, like, take it over the hill,
because it doesn't look like a mirror. Like, is it supposed to look like a mirror, or is it supposed to look like a reflection?
Yeah.
Or not? Is it supposed to look like a reflection, or is it supposed to look like you're shining a flashlight at a mirror and you're just getting the light?
Yeah, that's coming out of that, like a blowout sort
exactly,
of situation.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't really know. I just think that could have been done a little differently, and that probably would have pushed it a little further.
Sure.
As far as scariness goes, kind of like what you had said, there are a few jump scares that are a little gratuitous. Like, there were a few that are, like, back to back to back that it's, like, at that point, the tension's so high and you've had the one happen that you're expecting more to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
So the timing was a little strange, but I would say, like, for scariness, I'll give it like a 3.5 out of 5, 3 out of 5.
Okay.
And then for rewatchability, it doesn't feel very long.
I don't think it is. I want to say it's like maybe 1 hour and 40.
Yeah.
It's just over 1.5 hours.
Yeah.
But I could check.
Yeah. It doesn't feel very long, which is good. Cause even if it is long, it doesn't feel like it.
Nope.
And now that we've talked about it and there are, like, a few more details to it, I'll see myself rewatching it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say I'll give it a 3 out of 5 there too.
For rewatchability?
Yeah. Cause I'm sure, like, if people watch it and they don't have a podcast or, like, a friend who is as obsessed with horror as they are.
Right.
Like, they could watch it once and take it or leave it.
Yeah. Again, I feel like this is a good, it is a good date night movie. If like, horror is your date night movie, for some people it is, because it is, like, it will be that movie that will make you grab your date a little closer, but you will still be entertained and have fun. And I think for horror fans, they will appreciate it because it's a little bit darker, it's a little bit grittier. Sure, it does have, like, some campiness and some kind of, like, cheap scares, but I think that it is really good at not holding your hand when you're watching it. Giving you enough context to be able to, like, understand what's going on, but also giving you the freedom to, like, fill in the gaps and kind of figure out the ending for yourself.
Yeah.
And not feel like you're being given, like, a cheap ending, like a cheap happy ending.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah.
And I think that just going back to trivia real quick, I think Flanagan had been given advice from the producers or from whomever was higher up to make some of the, I think it was to, like, make things more obvious, or to even, like, take out that whole section with Kaylee talking about the ghosts because it was too boring, and to show it instead rather than having her just talk it out. And Flanagan's defense to that was just that, like, audiences are smarter than we give them credit for. they don't need to be like told every single little thing or shown every single little thing. Some things can be left to the imagination and they'll appreciate us like not thinking they're stupid.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Yeah, because there are people like us who watch these things. We know the tropes. We know what to look for.
Yep.
And when we get to watch a movie that allows us to actually take it and run with it a little bit, it's really appreciated.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm piggybacking off of your like unreliable narrator too.
Yeah.
Right. Because I think that is one of the fun things about this movie, not only that it has a dark ending, but also that it makes you think in your brain like, oh, wait a second, maybe I can't trust myself.
Yeah.
Maybe I can't trust what I see on screen. That's why the favorite scene that I had earlier is my favorite, because it's something that like you've never seen before.
Yeah.
You're just like, wait, that's so cool.
Yeah. I think that's factored into that scoring as well. It's just like probably in the quality area more than anything, where it's just like the fact that that made me question what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Also.
Yeah.
That's.
Yeah, it doesn't make cool. It doesn't make it scarier, sure. No. It's not for us at least, no. But like the quality, like all of those little details and like the cleverness of the ending and just like how they played this like reality game
with the
audience and with the characters is just fun. Like it just makes a really fun movie.
Yeah. The burnt toast of it all.
Ooh, that could be a fun murder weapon. Maybe I'll go with burnt toast because I would definitely die.
What about your rating?
So for my rating, I was going to change my weapon to the 20-pound Danforth anchor, you know, attached to the pulley and attached to the manual kitchen timer. But I decided that I would instead go with my first one, which was a hatchet wielded by a completely unmangled right arm.
Yeah.
Because it needs the right arm so it can mangle the rest of the body, ending with the face.
Absolutely.
So, yes, I'm going with this hatchet.
You can't just have the tool. You've also got to have the user.
Yeah. I really liked that visual of just this woman who was just completely mangled.
Yeah.
And the last thing they found her doing was like bashing her own head in. And the only thing that was untouched was her right arm because she needed it for whacking.
Absolutely. As most of us would. Gotta have the right arm unscathed.
I'm just trying to imagine trying to like hit your own right arm with the hatchet. It's like, I can't get the wrist. Shit. So for quality first, I did a 4 out of 5. I really like all the details in this movie. I love the two, well, actually the four main characters, because I love the chemistry between young Kaylee and Tim and then older Kaylee and Tim. They both had just really good banter. There was just some really good, like, light, warm-hearted moments. And then also, like, these very gritty, tense moments where they had to band together and they had to work together.
Yeah.
And I love Flanagan, so I didn't want to give it a 5 out of 5 because it is one of his earlier works. So he had a long way to go, but I can see a lot of homages.
Yeah.
Watching this again, I will tell you, like, I haven't seen it. I've definitely seen it since we saw it in the theaters, but it has been a minute.
Yeah.
And I definitely, like, it's been since 2014, since like I've seen it on the big screen when it really had the most impact. For scariness though, I'd say like there were a couple of times that I had some good jump scares or I had some good like, wow, that's really clever, but nothing that really truly terrified me. So I gave it more of like a 3.5, like hatchets out of 5. But rewatchability, I still gave it a 4. I'm thinking about dialing it back to more like 3.5 because I definitely have not seen it. But it is one of those movies that I highly recommend watching. Because it is one that like when I watch movies now, like I think about Oculus a lot.
Yeah.
For a lot of those reasons that we've talked about in this episode.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of in the same vein. And I hate to keep comparing them, but kind of in the same vein as like The Autopsy of Jane Doe, where like when I think of a movie that's going to make me question.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I'm wanting to feel. It's going to be one of the ones that's a contender at least.
When you have that moment of just like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Yeah. That moment of like, oh my, that was so not what I was expecting. It just immediately becomes like a cult classic. It becomes something like in my tops. In all of the great movies, Oculus is going to be up there.
Yeah.
Just because of some of the scenes that were in it.
Yeah.
So the last part of our podcast episode that we typically do is the, you know, what you doing.
Yeah.
What you doing.
Well,
it's been a week, right?
Yeah, it's been a week. As far as like what I'm consuming, I have been listening to The Shining.
Yes,
because we're going to be, on audiobook, because we're going to be covering that again here pretty quick. The first time that we covered it was pretty early on, and the audio is even chunky. Too crunchy for me to work
it's
with.
It's chunky. So, and you know what? I only watched it the one time, so, and I can like pull my notes back up. Like, I think it would be great to do it again.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I might have to listen to it. Can you send me it?
I think I can.
I don't care if it sounds crunchy. I just might want to listen to it. Just to
I'll send it to you. Yeah. So been listening to The Shining, and then I'll read it during work too. I have the Shining in every format. I have it on audiobook, ebook, physical book, and movie.
And movie.
and as a digital movie also, physical and digital.
Oh, sure.
And so I'll listen to it on Audible, and then I'll pick up my Kindle and I can start from where I left off, sort of thing.
It is your favorite book.
It is my favorite
book. That's kind of funny. Both of our favorite books are Stephen King books.
Yeah. And I'm not even the biggest Stephen King fan, but like The Shining is something else.
Well, I don't know. When you read Audrey Rose, you can let me know, because that kind of has like my, it kind of is in tie like with it.
Yeah. It's something special. So I've been reading and listening to that. And then at night before I go to bed, I've been reading American Psycho.
What's that by? Like, I've seen the movie.
It's by Brett Ellis Easton, or Easton Ellis. I can't remember. It's considered like a horror classic at this point.
Yeah.
But it is about just like a genuine psychopath.
Yes.
And I haven't watched the movie. I've never read the book. I don't know anything about it other than I know the name Patrick Bateman.
I'll be honest with you. I started the movie. I got about 3/4 of the way through, and I couldn't finish it. It wasn't that it wasn't entertaining. It just wasn't my cup of tea. It wasn't my bag of bones. Okay. I was just like, I was like, I don't get it. Like, it's like when I watched The Houses That October Built, or or the house that Jack built, or whatever
it is.
Some of these horror movies where I'm just like, I get it. I get it. I get why it's entertaining. It's not, it doesn't do anything for me.
I've heard that American Psycho is very much that way.
Kind of polarizing.
It's like some people, the people who aren't really like staunch horror fans, think the movie is really striking and they really like it.
Right.
But the people who are horror fans love the book. And it's because the first half of the book is written in such a like materialistic way, where it's like anything that he can point out, like a brand name or like that sort of thing, just to kind of like really assert the privilege and the materialism of the 1980s.
Right.
He does. But I actually kind of dig the way that it's written. It's weird. I could see a lot of people thinking that it's just dumb. And
so it's about like a psycho's daily life.
Yeah.
Just what he does.
Yeah. I'm really digging it so far. But I guess the first half of the book is written like that, and then the second half of the book becomes like the most depraved thing that you could ever read.
Got it.
And I'm really excited about it.
Got it.
So, you know, I'm consuming both of those things, which is great for my mental health.
There's nothing wrong with reading horror.
And honestly, there's not. And I find myself going into horror novels when I need to like come back into me, sort of thing. I've been consuming a lot of nature content, like all that kind of stuff, which is really helpful for my growth, I feel like, and really helpful for like when I can't be outside, I can be outside in my brain, sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
But horror is what feels like home.
Yeah.
So
it's like the safety net.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So this is what's like pulling me back into me.
Yeah.
And I've been really enjoying both of those things. As far as like games go, Chase and I have been going with our Baldur's Gate campaign, and I've noticed that I had put down my individual playthrough for quite a while. And it's getting to a point where I am not really remembering certain decisions that I made or the way that certain things led into one another.
Yeah.
So I'm revisiting my individual playthrough and spending a lot of time on it.
Okay.
And right now I am in a a fucking pickle.
Oh, no.
A fucking pickle. And there's no way out of it.
What's the pickle?
Did you ever fight Raphael?
Who's Raphael? The demon?
Yeah.
I think so.
You got to the third act and...
No, I don't think we got to the third act.
Oh, so you go to hell.
Oh.
You have the option. You don't have to do this. For some reason, I decided I wanted to.
Sounds interesting.
Raphael's HP, 666. which, hilarious. Also, terrible. And so you're in hell. You end up having to fight him, right?
Yeah.
And this giant demon that he has as like his friend.
Of course.
His seven other demon friends that are around him. So like the lowest HP thing that you're fighting is 100.
Oh, God.
And there's like six of those. And then there's one demon that's like 370. And then there's Raphael that's 666.
And do you have a party of four?
And I have a party of four.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And it's not even the ones that I normally use because one person's stuck in prison. The other one, I don't know where the fuck they went. But they were just
who do you have? Who do you have?
So I have Will, Gale, and Lazelle.
I mean, well, at least you have Lazelle.
Yeah.
At least she can be a meat shield, but fuck.
Yeah, Karlach's in prison. Oh. I don't know where the fuck Shadowheart went. No idea. But I'm also using her as collateral right now. I don't know where she is, but I'm promising her to somebody if they help me.
Wow.
Yeah. The clusterfuck that I'm in.
Where's Astarion? Did you kill him?
I genuinely don't know where
he is. I killed him. There was one night he tried to seduce me, or he tried to bite me in our sleep, and I just murdered him.
I might have told him to leave. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, you could
do
that. Yeah, you could just exile him.
I should have killed him.
I just marked him, and I thought it was really funny. Like, I thought my character was just going to beat the shit out of him. No, he fucking died. And the next day, they took his place out of camp. And I told Harrison, I was like, oh shit, should we reload? And he's like, I don't give a shit. I don't care.
Yeah, I was kind of toying around with the idea of like restarting Act 3 because I have a save point that's like right at the beginning of it. Because I was so lost at like what I was even doing at that point.
Right.
So I was like, maybe I should just start it over. And I was like, I'm just going to send it.
Yeah, you might as well try. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
What's the worst thing that's going to happen? You're going to die.
Yeah. The worst thing that's going to happen is I'm going to eventually end up going and loading back to that point again anyway.
Absolutely.
So I might as well try to defeat the literal devil. I will say, if you ever have the opportunity to go to hell, yes, it leads to fighting Raphael. However, you get to see a dupe of Raphael that is almost entirely naked, but is wearing like BDSM style like leather, and it's really skimpy and really hilarious.
You're like, and it's totally worth it.
It's worth it.
Totally worth it.
Actually, I might have a picture of it.
Oh my God.
It was so funny. I took a picture and sent it to Chase, and I was like, have you seen this?
Have you seen this?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's that. And then outside of like content that I'm consuming, we got to go on a hike.
Yeah.
It was really fun.
Oh, fuck. I totally forgot about that.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah. We got to go on a hike on Sunday.
We did. We went to Ecola State Park out on the coast.
Yeah.
Which is pretty close to where Harrison and I eloped, which is kind of cute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I came home and was telling mom, it's always so fun to go hiking with you because we're both like, look at that mushroom. Look at that moss. Touch the moss.
Touch it.
Touch the moss.
Fucking bouncy.
Yeah. Bounce, sniff bounce, this
bounce,
dirt.
Bounce, bounce. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I walked past Harrison. I was like, do you want to take a soil hit? And he's like, okay. Like, he hasn't taken a soil hit in so long.
Yeah.
I'm always doing that shit.
It was just really good because, like, we do this as an opportunity to connect with one another once a week anyway. But,
yeah,
like, to be able to do something outside of this, too, is nice.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. We needed something. We needed something to do just before, like, we came back from the holidays, and so we really wanted to go on a hike, and so I was really just really happy that you and Nick could come with us. It was a really pretty hike, too.
It was.
There was so much wind that, like, blew over a bunch of trees, so it was, like, some parkour that we had to, like, some parkour skills we had to pull out, but I was glad we didn't take Echo, because I think she would have just pulled us through all of that.
It was also one of the best days I've ever had at the coast.
No shit. Like, we brought so many layers and things thinking it was going to be shit weather. And it was awesome.
It was no wind, no rain. wasn't super sunny. It was just like, it was foggy and pretty.
Oh, and so pretty. Yeah. And it wasn't too cold, but it also wasn't hot, which is just like what you want when you're at the coast. Like, I don't want the sun to be out.
No, I don't go to the Oregon coast thinking I'm going to go to like a beach.
So like a beach. Yeah, like a Florida beach, right? I'm not doing that.
No, I'm going there for big waves and wind.
Exactly.
Like
that.
Yeah.
And the tide pools.
Yeah.
The tide pools are pretty banging too.
And some really nice top shelf rocky outcroppings. That's like, yeah.
We saw some really pretty stuff out there. I took a bunch of GoPro footage that I'll be sure to like, I'm going to make like a little video for it and edit it all. And then I'll probably put it up on a YouTube.
Yeah.
I could put it up on the Google Drive.
Oh yeah. Easy. And then we could take some little pieces of it and eventually use our podcast Instagram.
Yeah, I mean, we could.
Yeah.
We could do like make a adventure YouTube where we just go out hiking and stuff.
Dude, people can see what we do.
That'd be dope. That would be so much fun. We could definitely do that.
That would be fun. What about you? What have you been doing?
I feel like the last week has been, kind of boring other than like us going on that hike. It was really just coming back from the holidays. So I've just, you know, I've been working all week. Right before we came back, Harrison and I had like a date day. And so we wanted to do some leather work. I ended up buying a bunch of supplies and like a paper pattern to make him like an organizer for his belt that'll like hold his, it'll hold his multi-tool and his pen light. And we'll maybe have another strap that he can like attach his keys to or something like that. And he also has started getting really into leather working after we made those bookmarks for Christmas. And so he made Echo a collar.
It's so cute.
Yeah. He made this awesome buckle for it. I've made like 3 belts now. I've never had a buckle that looks as good as this one. and then he stamped her name in the back of it and dyed it and everything. And now we have like, he had outlined 4 other ones for Echo's mom, her brother and sister, and then her cousin Crunch.
Uh-huh.
And we're gonna slowly work on those. We're gonna try and get them done by the end of this month or the end of next month. And so that's been kind of a fun little side project.
Cute.
Yeah. And then I think the only other things that are coming up right now is just a lot more like, well, work, and then just like rock climbing and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which we should also schedule that. We're going to schedule Nosferatu and rock climbing.
Yeah.
And what else, Echo? What else is there for this? All righty. Is that the end of the podcast, Echo?
It is. It's funny because I was walking into this one thinking that this was going to be one of our shorter recordings, and it's our longest one.
Oh, shit. So we rambled a lot today. We didn't have a lot of notes, but we had plenty to catch up on.
Yeah, we did.
All right, Echo, can you say quiet? More quiet. Okay. Good night, everybody.
Bye.
It's always spooky.